I was very vehemently pro-choice. I was agnostic. I was radically feminist. I held all these views, and I started to realize I didn't know why, because during quarantine, I started to debate them, and I was like, wait, my reasons for holding my views don't make any sense.
The pro-choice, pro-life argument is a super emotionally charged argument. You ever just want to be able to talk with somebody about this topic and it not turn into this crazy shout fest between you and the other person just trying to agree on terms? Well, my guest, Aish, has some really great tactics on how you can do this. On today's episode, Aish will give you really great tools on how to talk with people who disagree with you on this topic. She'll give you really good arguments for the pro-life position, and she'll help you to steer clear of information that might trip you up. And if you're listening to this and you are pro-choice, I want you to know that we don't present any of this information to try and belittle you. Like I said, this can be a super emotionally charged topic. And I think if we can get to a place where we can come to an agreement on terms and speak to each other with humanity and dignity, you'll find that there's a way to have respectful dialogue on this topic. So without further ado, here's the episode with Aish and how you can share your pro-life positions with people who disagree with you.
So I've recently definitely been very focused on pro-life advocacy in terms of my content. I do TikTok content in terms of videos, responses, just kind of short videos that are more digestible.
That's Aish. She's my friend, and I discovered her on TikTok making short videos advocating for pro-life positions and arguments. TikTok right now is the most used social media app in America, but it's mostly used by young people. And a lot of people on this app are given a platform to share misinformation about pro-life and pro-choice positions. So what really drew me to Aish's content is that it takes a more intellectual approach to being pro-life and being a Christian. If you're new to Meme Lord Monday, you're probably wondering, why are we talking about Christian stuff? And why are we talking about pro-life arguments? Well, first off, my name is Matt Matias, and I'm a meme lord for the Lord. I run a page called Memes for Jesus, and this show is basically a hodgepodge of all the things that I like and all the things that my listeners like. I like to laugh and think and talk to people who grew up in the church with me. And this podcast is basically like a reconstruction podcast, helping Christians understand the legitimacy of Christian values and principles, where I'm able to tackle deep subjects while still keeping it goofy. Hope you like it. Stick around and I'll show you how you can get involved with the show.
Yeah.
Awesome. So when did you realize that you're super based?
I think I thought I was super based when I was not at all. I grew up in a very academically oriented environment. So I had been published when I was in high school in undergraduate journals, things like that, which made me think that I knew what I was talking about, but I didn't. Because I was reading all of this stuff, but it wasn't really related to what was going on in my personal life and what personal views I held. Like, for example, I was very vehemently pro-choice. I was agnostic. I was radically feminist in the sense that, and I still consider myself to be a feminist today, but not in the sense that I was, for sure.
Right.
And I held all these views, and I started to realize I didn't know why, because during quarantine, I started to kind of debate them. And I was like, wait, my reasons for holding my views don't make any sense. So when I started to get into philosophy, it was initially kind of ad hoc in the sense that I had these conclusions and I just wanted to confirm them. But the more I read, the more I realized I was wrong. And I think that moment where I realized how much bias I'd grown up with was when I became super based, for sure.
That's crazy. So I know how much you transition because I follow your account and I see the things that you transition from, like you mentioned, feminism. I'm guessing you're referencing like a third wave feminism, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And like you were pro-choice. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, you're very pro-life and like very Christian, like Orthodox Christian, super yes. Orthodox. Yeah. what was the moment? Can you pin it down to the moment where it was just like blam? that's when it happened.
Yeah, I think that the first moment that I realized there was something seriously wrong was I was like a common warrior, you know, like for the pro-choice advocacy, because I didn't have a platform of any sorts, but had social media. So obviously the most natural thing to do is fight every single person who disagrees with you in the comments, right?
Of course.
So I decided to do that for the pro-choice cause. And I remember being tagged in this one post that was showing the aftermath of some of the abortions that occur. And obviously these like midterm abortions, I wouldn't even say they were late term, but just the things that are done to these unborn children. And that moment, I was like, that's when I started to question. And I think that questioning is what started. And this is way before I even started to look into it intellectually of any sort. But my intuition was that something is wrong. It's not as black and white as it seems. At first, it was so clear to me. I was like, well, obviously, you know, it's a woman's body. You know, like how could anyone else believe any different? And, you know, even I grew up with conservative parents who I would talk to about this, and I'd be like, but what if the child is born into like poor families or something like that, you know? And I would use all of these arguments that I hear so frequently now. And I say this so often. I know exactly where you're coming from because I've heard it all before from myself, you know? So I think that that was definitely a turning point for me in terms of realizing that it wasn't as black and white. And then my second biggest turning point was honestly just through debate, because I'd been researching pro-choice philosophy. I felt a lot more confident eventually because I wasn't using these kind of popular arguments anymore. I was using more philosophically based and grounded arguments. But I was talking to one of my friends. We were debating each other because all my friends and I would just debate each other. He was very pro-life. And I just realized I straight up had nothing to say to him. Like, he was just right. And one debate, I don't believe, can change someone's mind. I believe, honestly, that if one debate changed your mind on every single thing, you would never hold an opinion for more than like 2 days if you're on the internet, you know? Yeah. But I do think that it should be a sign that you have to do more research. Like, if someone can, if you can't defend your positions, that means there's more to learn. I think that's when my mind kind of opened up to the idea that maybe pro-life isn't wrong.
That's so awesome. A lot of people who deconstruct these days, you know, are kind of going through that. But I think there's maybe a community of people that are only allowing objections to come their way against what they're currently believing. And they're not allowing themselves to question what they believe. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
They're like, and so I don't discredit people who are saying, I'm deconstructing. And I'm learning more about my faith. Like, that's great. I encourage that. But it's the people that deconstruct and don't think inwardly and really challenge their own personally held views and why they hold them. That's like the bad part. So that's awesome that you kind of had like your own deconstruction period. As Aish and I talked about this topic, we realized that a lot of people are convinced of the pro-choice position more because of political concerns. While I really don't like to get into politics on this podcast, we talked about it briefly here on how we can come to terms with this topic and politics.
Honestly, I identify as right wing because I think because of my, like where my ideology stems from is very much on the right and conservative. But I also think we need to not demonize people on the left, because ultimately a lot of it comes from humanism and this idea that humans need to be protected and loved and given correct treatment. And we just disagree on how that is to be done. But I think leftists also need to understand that right-wing people are also coming from a love of humanity. So I think the problem is on both sides of not seeing that we're both aiming towards the same thing, just in different ways. But I also think, especially on the right, like, it's too easy to say that liberals just don't care or are heartless murderers
or are demons,
you know, or they're demons. Yeah. But I really think that, and being a former liberal, like, my sentiments never came from a bad place. Like, I always thought I was protecting people. I thought I was doing what was right for women. I thought that I was searching a love of humanity. I just wasn't, but I thought I was, you know? So I think we should treat people with integrity in the sense that they have the right intentions. We just disagree on how to do it. And it's up to us to make our case about why those intentions can best be pursued and realized through our means, not theirs.
Like you said, I think they're coming from a good place, but maybe not implementing it practically. So let's, if you don't mind, let's just go through some of the practical objections. Mm-hmm. And then I'd love to hear how you refute them best you can. So like, I know one big one is that no human being has the right to take the autonomy of another person, and therefore it should be the woman's right mm-hmm. to abort her baby. Like, what? How do you respond to that objection?
Yeah, so I think this objection has become a lot more common actually now because of specifically this post that I've seen multiple times about this one person saying, I don't care if it's a life. I don't care if it's a person. Nobody has the right to your body. And it's just like, again, it's making this issue black and white in the sense that I literally don't care if that's a baby. But then you consider all these things like, okay, well, is it still attached to the woman when it's out of the womb, but attached by the umbilical cord, you know, before the placenta has been delivered in the last stage of labor? Mm-hmm. Like, technically, yeah, it's still infringing upon her bodily autonomy, but would you think it's okay? Like, they have no personhood, so you could do anything to them. You could throw them to the ground, do whatever, you know, imagine horrible things that could be done to that, you know, because essentially it's an object to you, not a person. And so you really have to consider that this logic leads you into an insane amount of absurd conclusions. And there is a type of argument for that called a reductio ad absurdum, where at some point, if you're getting into all of these absurd conclusions, maybe it's your theory that's wrong. Because I very much doubt that people are going to say, yeah, I think it's okay to end a child's life because they're attached for no reason, just because they're attached by the umbilical cord to the mother, because technically they're still attached to her body and they're still receiving her resources because it's like, for example, they receive like oxygenated blood and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so because it's my body and my resources, I can do whatever, right? And then it's the question of just how far does it go with other cases? People use this and then say, what if a woman was assaulted? Like, you would never say that her abuser could, you know, use her body for their sake. So aren't you just kind of doing the same thing? But there's a difference between a volitional and a non-volitional agent. Because a child, for example, that doesn't know what it's doing and is not like doing something that's intrinsically wrong. For example, hugging someone who doesn't want to be hugged does not deserve to be have their life ended or their personhood negated because they're quote unquote infringing upon autonomy. So I think that argument is just kind of absurd at the end of it.
I gotcha. For the dumb people me. Spell out the sentience argument just real quick. The internet is more accessible than it's ever been, and with that has come an absolute pandemic of people addicted to pornography. This addiction statistically is affecting Christians and non-Christians alike. It's a problem. Porn is a human problem, but Covenant Eyes provides a human solution. Covenant Eyes helps you and the ones you love live porn-free through transformative accountability relationships. With Covenant Eyes, you choose someone that you know and trust to walk with you as your ally and to hold you accountable for your online behavior. Me and my friends use it, and I've seen it firsthand break the bonds of addiction in people's lives. This stuff works. So basically what you do is you download the Covenant Eyes app, it tracks the activity on your devices, and your friend, who's your ally, gets a Victory app which shares your activity feed right to their phone. You and your ally will be able to celebrate victories together and have honest and caring conversations about your successes, setbacks, and triggers. Nothing works better than this. If you struggle with pornography addiction online and you're ready to see some victory in your life, download Covenant Eyes and use promo code MONDAY for 30 days free. Try it out. I've gotten so many success stories from this app, and that's why I'm so happy that they've chosen to sponsor Meme Lord Monday. Again, that's Covenant Eyes. Use the link in the show notes of this episode and use promo code MONDAY for 30 days free. Victory over addiction has never been easier.
Yeah, of course, of course. So essentially the idea is that because we value pleasure and don't like pain, we should assign moral value at the point at which a person can process pleasure and pain. So sentience is essentially that ability. So for example, typically it's considered, I believe, like 24 weeks into the pregnancy, that, or sometimes as early as 18 weeks. Now there's studies that show, like a recent study in 2020 shows that fetuses may feel pain as early as 12 weeks. So that's definitely, you know, in terms of the research, it's a bit hazy there. But regardless of what the research is, the argument says that at that point where sentience begins, that's when we consider the fetus a sentient entity, which is when it's considered a person.
Nice.
And has moral value.
For basically. Those of you who don't understand, Google, please, because I'm not stopping this interview. She's covering a lot of very, very like heady topics and phrases. Just for the sake of time, like, if somebody wants to have good arguments for being pro-life, what would you say are like the fundamentals of defending a pro-life position?
Hey guys, just wanted to let you know that this episode of Meme Lord Monday is brought to you by Covenant Eyes. Covenant Eyes is a screen monitoring accountability software that can help keep you and your friends from adult content online. If you're really serious about breaking adult content addiction viewing on your phone or on your laptop or any of your devices, Covenant Eyes is the best in the business, hands down. This is much more than just a screen blocking software. This is accountability. This networks you with your friends and helps bring them into your life and welcomes them to help hold you to the standard that you want to be held to. This program has helped heal marriages, restore relationships, and break addictions. Use my promo code Monday, that's M-O-N-D-A-Y, for 30 days free. And you can find the link to Covenant Eyes in the description or show notes of this episode. All right, let's get back to the show.
I think the first thing is to understand pro-choice arguments, honestly. Because you can make the best pro-life argument ever, but you will never convince someone if you don't understand how to refute pro-choice arguments. Because at the end of the day, honestly, the attitude most, and this is speaking as a former, like as one of them, as someone who was one of these people, the attitude that a lot of pro-choicers have towards ethical theory and conversations about abortion is, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm just about to prove that. So essentially, they're not going into it willing, like with open ears, willing to listen. And I found, like, I've converted quite a few people from pro-choice to pro-life. And I found that it only ever works if I listen to every objection they have, refute them, and then say, hey, here's a reasonable alternative, and then explain a pro-life argument. So before you even start considering, like, wait, what's like a positive argument for pro-life? I would say, you need to listen before you can speak. You need to listen to pro-choicers. And another thing is not like strawmanning arguments, because you will get nowhere by being bad faith and just like assuming the worst of their arguments. Like, for example, when they say the fetus is not alive, it's good to check them on their scientific facts. And it's important to check that because that's obviously scientifically just inaccurate. But oftentimes they don't mean that it's not alive in a biological sense. They mean it doesn't have person, you know? So when you're addressing them, you need to make sure to be like, okay, well, it's a biological fact that it's a life. Now, I'm assuming that you mean it doesn't deserve moral consideration. Let's talk about that. So I think there has to be some charitable attitudes for pro-lifers to get anywhere. But I think being able to refute these arguments, and especially the common ones, bodily autonomy, quality of life, what else?
I was going to actually ask you about the quality of life one. Like, because their objection is, well, we should abort the child if they're not going to have a good upbringing because the foster system sucks. You know, adoptions are way behind, et cetera. What's your favorite response to that?
So, as someone who is horrified by the fact that I used to use this argument, because it's like, honestly, like embarrassing for me, because I look back at it and the logic is just not there in the slightest. Because since when do we end other people's lives because we think they're not good enough?
Yeah.
Like, since when do we think it's okay to end all of the lives of like poor people or end the life of someone just because they're poor, underprivileged, and end the life of someone just because they're going through something in terms of like an abusive family or something like that. Their life is not worth any less. They deserve our protection just like every other human being does. So the thing is, the logic is not there. And the statistics are also just not on their side, because as much as everyone suffers, specifically when they bring up things like foster care and adoption systems, firstly, like newborn children have, I can't remember the stat off the top of my head for this, but I want to say almost like six couples competing to adopt them.
I actually used to be a foster care agent, and I used to help do family finding.
Gotcha.
And so infants, yeah, there's always a waiting line, a waiting list for infants, even mentally handicapped ones. And if it's not like a welcoming family, there's always, like literally always for a newborn, there's always a foster family. And they're always overjoyed because there's always a waiting list all the time.
Yeah. No, for young children, especially. And then in terms of the foster care system, and again, so clearly this is your area of expertise, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, it's not as bad as people make it out to be, in the sense that people demonize it to be this horrifically abusive system that always ends badly. But I think there's a lot of successful cases too. And obviously, and again, like I'm more moderate with economics in the sense that I also believe that we should be reforming the system and it should be better. I think we should be continuously trying to improve the lives of our children. I think the children are the center of our society and need to be like prioritized. But, and that goes in terms of like government funding, for example. But I also think that if we're expecting perfection, like it's not perfect. It will never be, you know, but that doesn't mean we should be ending lives because it's not perfect. Because then I can say anything. I can say that, well, until, you know, world hunger is solved, we should end the lives of all people who can't afford food just so they don't starve. Like, that's insane, you know? Like, you're saying, oh, I want to prevent suffering, so why don't we just end their lives before they suffer? That's not how, you know, once it's a life, and we give that protection to everyone.
So what do you do when people in your family or your immediate friend circle are all pro-choice and you just can't seem to get your own views across in a way that's helpful, because this is such an emotionally charged topic?
I think that it's always important to treat them with integrity. Say, I understand that your motivations are coming from protecting women, and I want you to know that I'm not against you on that. I think that protecting women is one of the most important causes that there is. But I also don't think we should go about it in a way that results in the ending of the lives of unborn children. And I think that while this is an ethical issue that has a lot of facets to it and needs to be looked at in a way that isn't overly reductive, we can have a conversation about this. And ultimately, I have come to the conclusion that abortion is wrong and it's not justified in any of these cases you talk about because of XYZ. And at the end of the day, I will say, like, I've had these conversations with some people and they turn out great. Sometimes they'll become pro-life. Sometimes they won't, but they'll respect me, which is fine, you know? And then there's times when they'll cut me off and they'll be like, I don't care. Like, you're wrong. I'm right. And honestly, at that point, you can't do anything. Like, at that point, it's a set of people who are opposed to anyone with their beliefs and want to live in an echo chamber where nobody disagrees with them, which is on them and not something that's in your control.
Yeah. So, I mean, then there's like the Joe Rogan style argument where it's like, you're going to let a 10-year-old baby, you're going to force her to have a baby. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're going to do? Like, Joe Rogan, I think he was arguing with the CEO of Babylon Bee when they were interviewing. And he's like, so you mean to tell me a baby 10 years old is going to, you're going to force her to give birth to a baby? Like, how do you categorize that? Would you say that's more of an emotional argument, or was that like a legitimate argument?
I would say both. Yeah. I think that in ethics, an emotional argument can be legitimate because even reductios at some point are sometimes a sort of emotion kind of based argument. Because like, for example, why do we consider it absurd? One of our things is intuition, right? But I think that the biggest issue I have with this argument is, firstly, let's talk about the statistical likelihood of this happening, right? So firstly, women typically reach puberty at age 12 or have their first menstrual cycle at age 12, which means before that, they typically cannot get pregnant. Secondly, the rate of like sexual assault for women is definitely not 100% of cases. And for children, it is also not 100% of cases. So that all together combined, because already we know that sexual assault cases make up 0.5% of all abortions. On top of that, knowing that it's unlikely that a person of that age could get pregnant. On top of that, knowing that because they're a child, they are less likely to be in this situation in the first place, the statistical likelihood of that happening is so minuscule. And this isn't to say that I'm not considering it as a legitimate case. It could happen. Not saying that. But why are you basing your case for 100% off of this tiny minority? If your entire argument is built on this one case out of like a million, I think there's a problem with your argument. So there's that for one. But then also there is an emotional appeal to this. And I understand that people make this argument and it's just so common and it needs to be addressed. Like you can't just dismiss. One thing is you cannot be dismissal of it. It's just because it is a minority doesn't mean it's a case that doesn't matter. So I'll have to talk about it. But on top of that, being pro-life typically entails being okay with an early term delivery in which the baby does not survive if there is a medically demonstrated risk to the mother's health. So that means if the mother's life is at risk, like the doctors all say she's going to die if she doesn't have this early term delivery. I'm going to call it that specifically because when I talk about abortions, I mean elective abortions, which is not the same thing. And we know that the baby is going to die at the end of that. It is an act of self-defense at that point and a legitimate act of self-defense because there was no other choice but to lose her life. And in the case of a child who's like 10, it is unlikely that she would even be able to give birth safely. So on top of that, that's another factor. But all things considered, in the case that, okay, she can safely give birth and this happens, which is already so unlikely, I would say yes. Although I'm not saying, I don't think anyone should be like, oh, it's a blessing. You know, you've been like, I think people are too easy to say that, oh, it's just like, it's a positive thing and you should embrace it. When yes, it's a difficult thing to go through. But does that mean that we should deprive another child of their life? No. So I think at the end of the day, it's definitely a hard question in terms of there's stakes on both sides, but we need to understand that there's an objective value to human life that needs to be protected. So
I like that because it's like if there's a reasonable case for the child to be safe when they're born, to be healthy when they're born, then I think that we should value the life of the unborn child. But I mean, pro-choicers, they do have examples where this has happened, where it's like a 12-year-old, I think, in Ohio. The judge was like, it's great, you know, have the baby, enjoy being a mother. And pro-choices were like, what the, you know, they were going nuts. And like, I feel that because it's like, what do you do in that type of situation? Because it is extremely rare. If I understand your position, though, it's like, because it's so rare, we probably shouldn't base our entire policy on it. We should make addendums, but probably not the entire like system.
Well,
what do you think?
Not exactly. Okay. It's more that it's not prudent to base your entire argument off of a tiny minority of cases.
Gotcha.
It's like as if I were to say dog bites can be lethal, which is like a tiny minority of cases. We should kill all dogs. Like that makes no sense. Like that makes absolutely no sense.
It's horrible.
It's very illogical to base your entire argument off of a minority. And in the case that it does happen, I think that the objective status of human life does take precedence.
I like that. So as I said, I'm super pro-life, but I always consider, like politically speaking, because this is a political topic, should governments allow, you know, safe and legal abortions? Should it be available?
One thing that I can say is I've spent a lot of time also critiquing the pro-choice statistics that are put out there. But it's one of the best examples of an argument that is just made by people who don't understand how to read stats, pretending they know how to read stats.
Yes, I love it.
Is when people say that banning abortions does not end abortions, or doesn't reduce abortions, and the statistics show this, and then they use these objectively horrible statistics. Mm. Like, for example, right? I remember I made this very long video, just absolutely demolishing this one girl's video where she was pointing out statistics that banning abortion doesn't reduce abortion. And all of these statistics, I went directly to the sources, like a lot of them were from the WHO and things like that. Firstly, many of them were from countries that are lesser developed, which do not have the authority over their citizens that a lot of first world countries have. Like, having lived in India, I can say people care less about the letter of the law than in America, for example. So banning abortions might work less because there's less government authority and influence, for example. But also, it does work, even in these countries. For example, unplanned pregnancies, right? The number of unintended pregnancies reduces, as well as the number of abortions. Mm. And people say that, and this is because of abortion bans, because people are less likely to copulate if they think that they're actually going to be results from it. Yeah. You know, like there's no way out of it. You're going to have a kid if you have unprotected casual relations. Yes. And that's just how it is. And so we see all these studies, and when you really look up the statistics, it actually just ends up like the studies that the pro-choicers are trying to use end up proving pro-life points.
I love it.
Honestly, I went into, because I was not ad hoc about this. Yeah. Like, I went into that genuinely wondering, because I had the same questions of you in terms of practicality and implementation. Because while I think regardless, abortion should be banned based on principle, I do understand that there is a practical side to it. And I wanted to understand that further. So I went into it being like, I don't know what I'm going to come out with in terms of conclusions. And I was just looking at the stats and I was like, wait, like none of this makes sense, because none of it is saying abortion bans don't work. They're saying they do. And so I really do think, and especially in a country such as America, like another example people give is more women will die. Firstly, the rate of deaths from unsafe abortions, so that's illegal abortions in developed countries, is like 0.003% or something like that, like 3 per every 100,000 or something like that, which is ridiculously low. And the reasons are that the main complications that result from abortions are hygiene related or expertise related. And the fact is, you best believe that in America, the hygiene, like the kind of hygiene standards, even for something illegal, are far superior to anything in the countries which have high rates of death from abortion, because that's just a fact of our living standards. So significantly more women, like statistically, percentage-wise, are not going to die from abortions, most likely, if it's banned. It is not the case that the bans are ineffective. Although in America, because of the ideological kind of factors, maybe short-term might be not as effective. And then there's just a million other things that just, so I think that abortion bans are quite literally the pragmatic solution too. So
that's amazing. And there's one thing that you highlight in some of your content where it's like, when more like pro-choice / liberal leaning people start affirming traditional / pro-life position, like unknowingly, they're like, we should absolutely tax and force men to stay with women that they have intercourse with. We should tax them. They should be together. They should be held together and held accountable for their actions. And it's like, oh, it's almost like a traditional marriage. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, wow, bro. But hey, we're drawing close to the end here. Are there any like websites or resources that you would recommend for people looking to find good arguments for pro-life?
For one, I have a whole thing called a pro-life bibliography in my TikTok bio. So in my link tree, it's in my TikTok bio, where I've listed like helpful studies, helpful books, things like that. I'm going to continue to add to that, like especially over break. So there's that. And then there's also like secular pro-life. I'm hesitant to trust some of these bigger organizations just because the more organized it gets and the more politically motivated it gets, the more sometimes inaccurate information can be. I know that there were some things I saw from some from big platforms that were just factually incorrect. And I think it's very important as a pro-lifer who is constantly critiqued, because we are literally in the business of critiquing pro-choice arguments because they make up the majority in a lot of the spaces that we are in, which means that if you get something wrong, all of a sudden they're like, oh, and you're critiquing us, you know, it becomes like a hypocrisy thing. So you have to be very careful with your sources. So I would be careful with these bigger platforms. So far, what I've seen from secular pro-life is pretty good. But like I said, I would fact check things always.
I really appreciate that. I really appreciate what you're doing, because you do endure a ton of criticism like crazy, like really corny stuff, too. They're like, she doesn't even use Ebonics right or whatever. I don't even know if Ebonics is a word anymore. What do they say? A-V-E or whatever. I saw one. Somebody, you
oh,
seen that one?
I saw it's that. So, yeah. Anyways.
Haters.
Yeah. Honestly, it's just so funny because the amount of people who call me a pick me, it's so funny because it's like, trust me, I'm not like doing this for validation. Because if I was, I would be pro-choice. How much validation I would get? I used to get so much validation as a pro-choicer. Trust me, from men and women alike. Like, I did not become pro-life for the popularity of it.
Based. That's so good. Yeah. So like those watching, can you tell them quickly where they can find you and how they can support you if possible?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on TikTok as theist.ice. So that's theist, the word, and then a.aish. I also have Instagram, which is, I'll just say it's linked in my TikTok because it's a bit long to spell and complicated because it's my full name. But yeah, I mean, hopefully I'm going to be active on Twitter later on eventually, but mostly just Instagram and TikTok.
Awesome.
I also have a Discord server that I run with my friend Brooks. You can ask questions there. There's plenty of people there to answer. And we actually have two, but we're not too active pro-life server. But our other server is pretty big. It has like 1,000 plus people. It's called Nihil Sine Dio, which means nothing without God. But you can ask pro-life questions if you want, but also just Christianity, things like that. So it's also linked in my TikTok bio.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, because I know how like ridiculously busy you are. Aren't you doing like 7 like majors at the same time or something?
Not quite, but it feels like it sometimes, I swear.
Gosh, man. But yeah, anyways, I really appreciate your time. I know your time is very, very precious. So I appreciate that. Y'all go follow Theist Aish and then also check her out on Instagram to find out what she's got going on there. She also does a lot of apologetic stuff, so highly encourage you guys to follow her. But all right, thank you guys so much for watching, and we're going to call it a day. See ya. Yo guys, what's up? Thank you so much for watching or listening. If you got some value out of what I'm doing here on the show, please consider becoming a supporter of Meme Lord Monday. You can do so for as little as $2 a month. And I'm doing all sorts of perks and goodies just for you. If you go to memelordmonday.supercast.com, you can see all the tiers and benefits that I offer. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you on Monday.